The European Central Bank has just unveiled their plan to introduce a digital euro that will complement the physical euro. So I figured let's just go to the source and ask the ECB to highlight everything that we should know about it. Specifically, I asked the program director of the Digital Euro Project, Evelien Witlocks, questions like, why do we need a digital euro? What does the digital euro look like from the perspective of an ordinary citizen? How will it reshape the financial industry? And finally, I asked her about various controversial aspects of the digital euro, such as privacy, whether it will replace cash, and whether it will be programmable. And now, without further ado, here's my full interview with Evelien Witlocks at the European Central Bank. So, Evelien, welcome to the Money and Macro channel. You're here to talk about the digital euro. Now, when talking about money, people tend to think about this thing over here, the euro, issued by your institution, the European Central Bank. But I think what less people know is that this type of money, a bank card, is nowadays the type of money that most people use, actually, way more than cash. And so I also think that most people are fairly happy with this arrangement. And so I thought it would be interesting to, you know, when exploring the digital euro, talk about first, what's the problem? Like, we have cash, we have digital private bank money. Why do we need a digital euro?
Thank you. And thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here. So maybe first it's good to explain a bit about the difference between the two things that you showed, because the banknote is what we call central bank money. It's your claim against the central bank, against the ECB in this case.
Yes.
When you have when you do your payments with your card, normally you have put your money at a bank or a payment institution, and you have a claim against that institution. So there's a difference. And of course, this bank has money at the central bank, so there's central bank money behind.
Yeah.
But there's a difference between the two. And even though you don't always think about it, you trust that the two are interchangeable. And the fact that you put your money at the bank, you never think about this more, or you're not concerned about this, you do all your payments with the card. But it's also partly due to the fact that you know that if you want, you can go to the ATM and you can have a banknote again, and vice versa. So what we see is that the way people start to pay is changing, and it differs per country in mm-hmm. Europe.
Yep.
So from the Netherlands, I'm from the Netherlands originally. One in every five payments is only still cash. All the rest we do digitally. If you look to Austria, it's completely the opposite. There's still a lot of being paid with cash. But what we see overall in Europe is that the preference to start to pay with digital means of payment, so like a card or with your mobile watch or your mobile phone, is gaining traction. So where first 72% of the transactions were done with cash, in 3 years' time this moved to 59%. And if we ask people what would be their preference to pay, then it's more than half that people say, I would prefer to pay digitally. So we see changing consumer behaviors, I would say.
Yeah.
So it's the people that say that they want to start using something else. So let us now fast. So the simple answer to your question would be, okay, we have these two types of money, like you showed. But this one is a physical one, and it's there for ages, and it worked for ages. And as a central bank, we stay committed to it. We even have now an inventory for a new design of the cash. So we're still connected to this. But everything is digitalizing. So why wouldn't we digitalize cash? So that's the simple answer. So it's to prepare our central bank money for the future.
Because money is a public good, right? And
yes.
My parents paid mostly with central bank money.
Yes.
So they paid mostly with public money.
Yeah.
I'm also from the Netherlands. I pay mostly with digital private bank money.
Yes.
And there's no public alternative for that.
Not digitally, no.
And that's what you're saying, okay, here we are just adjusting with the times.
Yes, we're adding an option. So if we would fast forward and the current decline of the usage of cash, so this is not us not wanting to provide it, but people using it less, we believe that this access to central bank money, this balance that we have found between the two, is good to keep, and to keep this option also for the future, indeed.
But why is it good? Because I can get behind it, you know, like, okay, having a public good is good. You know, like, just like water is most often, you know, done by the government. But, and most people, I think, accept that. Like, hey, okay, money should, some part of it should be public. At least for cash, it's, you know, there's no controversy about it at all that the central bank does that and private banks don't. But now, you know, we have this system. This is how it evolved. And what I'm missing a little bit in your answer still is, you know, what's the advantage then? Like, why not keep it that way? Or what's the advantage, or what are the risks for having our digital payment system being dominated by private parties?
Well, dominated is still okay, but you could go to a scenario where there's no other alternative. And that we believe it's important that we keep having this choice. So now you have a choice, so either you pay with cash or you pay with a card or a mobile phone or whatever. And we believe towards the future it's important that you keep having this option to pay with digital cash. As you say, payments is something you don't think about a lot. I do because I work in payments for all my life, but in general, people don't think about payments. You just do payment and it just need to work. And you trust that it works. And in that sense, it's similar to water, to electricity. It's not something you think about a lot, but because it's a hygiene factor, you expect that it's there and that it's working. And since it's so important for society at large, if you have an interruption in digital payments, then it's in the 8 o'clock news. I mean, it's really quite quickly disruptive. So we believe it's good that towards the future, we make sure that there is always this public option. And then it's for the end users what to use, if they want to use cash or that they want to use private means of payment, or that they prefer to have the digital euro, which is a public good. Mm-hmm. And then last but not least, I think payments should be there for everybody, also in a digital age. So since if the digital euro would be there, we would make sure, like we do for banknotes, that it's widely accessible and widely usable also for people that are less financially included, or less financially digitally included. So we really think it's important that the digital euro as a public good also takes care of them.
So what I heard in that answer is two points. Security. So depending on a private party, if something happens, you know, there's no other option, the payment system is gone. If we live in a world where the digital euro is there, the backup is a digital euro. That's an advantage.
Yes.
So there's security, national security, I guess, or payment security. And then financial inclusion is the second argument I heard, right? Some people, you know, I've noticed this myself. At some point, I lived in South Africa. To open a bank account in a foreign country is very difficult. It's very tricky. It takes a long time. And so for a while, I didn't have a bank account there. And that is, you know, that makes life very difficult. But getting a bank account is not so difficult. But here, even in Europe, there are people who find it difficult either to open a bank account, I guess, or to maybe maintain it, and so you're saying, hey, for these people, there's also the public option, and it should be, I guess, then easier accessible than a private bank account.
Yeah, that's one part. So it's for the people that are not easily getting access via a bank. But it also that we will pay extra attention for people that are more digitally and financially excluded, also in the design of the digital euro. So it's a public good, we're not for profit, so we can really make sure that it's very simple to use, that it has also caters for people with disabilities and these kind of things, which is coming very natural for something that's a public good, less natural. I don't say that they don't do it, but it's less natural for a commercially driven company.
Okay, oh yeah. Because I was, you know, when you first said this, like, oh, we can make it easier as a product, as a public provider, sort of the economist in me started thinking, hey, wait a minute, markets should solve that. But actually you're saying, yes, markets solve that for a broad population, but not maybe for all sort of more vulnerable people,
yes,
for whom it's more difficult to make a profit as a private entity, yep, and as a public entity you're concerned. Yep. Okay. Yep.
And the fact that if you have something for the whole of Europe, so let's say, so one of the, we'll come to that probably, but one of the ways we think that a digital euro could be provided is via a digital euro app, which mm-hmm. will be provided by the euro system. And then we can also make sure that it has all kind of features for example, a certain disabled people. It also make it more efficient because in every country we have a couple of them, but if you group them in the whole of Europe, it's still a significant part of the population of which you can create something really good.
Yeah.
That's it. One thing that I would like to add to the aspect that you mentioned on security, one thing that we have not touched upon a lot is that for our payments, which we just established is like crucial, like water and electricity for society, is that we are currently very dependent on non-European players. So 72% of our payments flow through networks which are not European.
And that's Visa and MasterCard mostly, or?
Yeah, not only, but those are one of the two big ones indeed. And we believe that towards the future, it's important that we also have real pan-European networks. So we have in certain countries domestic solutions. So in the Netherlands we have Ideal. In Spain they have Bizum. So we don't say there are not national solutions, but that's not a pan-European solution that you can use everywhere in the eurozone.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the current time and age, it's important that we also have something pan-European there.
So yeah, okay. So it makes sense. Payments is a public infrastructure, or like, it's maybe done by private parties, but it's a national interest,
yes,
basically, right? And it's dominated by American groups at the moment. The geopolitical landscape is shifting. Maybe it's good as Europe to at least have our own crucial infrastructure in order. And with this, we can possibly do that. And indeed, like, I actually noticed this because I moved to Belgium. So I live in Belgium. And there they also have, this is called Payconic. That's like similar to Ideal. And it's an alternative to Visa and MasterCard. And it's most merchants use it because I think the fees are lower than with Visa and MasterCard. But I found it very frustrating moving across a border between these small countries that I was excluded from a lot of stuff. Like, for example, the OV chip card. That's the public transportation pass only works via Ideal, but not via Payconic. Similarly, you know, if friends want to send each other money in the Netherlands, we do it with an app called Tikkie, and that uses Ideal. But I couldn't use it anymore, you know, living in Belgium, in the European Union. And so this could potentially solve that issue, because then I can just use a digital euro.
Yes. We also think that it's really strange that we have a currency which, in banknotes, in cash, fiscal money, we have something that you can use everywhere, but digitally we don't have something that works everywhere in all use cases. And I think you give a couple of examples. I experienced the same moving from the Netherlands to Germany, certain payment methods were not accepted here. And if we with some European colleagues want to share the bill, it's impossible. Then the only way to do it is with cash.
Yeah.
So indeed, the digital euro will be designed that it's really both for peer-to-peer payments. So if we want to pay each other or in shop, so either a physical shop or an online shop, that you can use the payment methods everywhere in the eurozone, and it's everywhere accepted, and that really adds to everyday convenience of everybody.
Yeah. Okay. So, for me, you know, this sounds like, okay, maybe at least, you know, talking to other people, I don't hear them take this perspective too often. I don't, because how I, you know, interpret this, you know, from our conversation, but also from reading about the digital euro before, is the digital euro is, for a large part, a public alternative to Visa and MasterCard. Is that somewhat right? I know it's more, but I think that is, or let me put it like this, is that a part of the discussion, or is that a part of the narrative that's not talked about so much?
Yeah.
Like a bit misunderstood.
Yeah. Well, we're not specifically against any of the private means of payment, but we find it important indeed that there is a public alternative next to commercial alternative that there are, and that's really a pan-European solution.
Yeah.
And that's indeed the biggest driver for the digital euro.
Okay, so I want to talk about that a little bit next, sort of from a little bit more from my personal perspective, not my personal perspective, but a personal perspective, sort of what might change if the digital euro is introduced, because it's not certain that it will be introduced. And then maybe a little bit about the systemic perspective, because, okay, we've talked about Visa and MasterCard, we can talk about the banks. There is a payment system, and the digital euro will likely make a big impact on that. Some, you know, banks might be worried that they're going to lose business. Maybe a Visa is worried that they're going to lose business. Maybe some people are happy that they will lose business. So, but it has probably big implications, and I know you thought about this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I would want to do after that. So first, you know, I know we talked a little bit already about this little card over here. How might this change for me? Like, if I want to start paying in a shop with a digital euro, how does it work? Do I get a new card from my bank? Do I get a new card from the European Central Bank? Do I get a virtual card from the European Central Bank? How can I do this in a physical shop? And then I want to talk about the online payments.
Yep. But before you can start paying with the digital euro, you need to go to a payment service provider, quite often the bank. So,
mm-hmm.
If we look to the current, there's a legislation in progress for the digital euro. So in that proposal, it says that every payment service provider, so every bank, should also provide access to the digital euro there. So in that sense, it would be rather easy. So you would go to your bank and you would say, listen, I also want to have a digital euro account. So that's where it starts. And since this bank already knows you, there's no additional information that needs to be shared. So this digital euro account can just be opened. Then you need to make sure that you have digital euros. And that you can do in two ways. So either you bring cash, and then you put cash is transformed into digital euros on your account.
Yeah.
Or you connect it to a bank account that you already have, and you say, I want to fund my digital euro account with, let's say, 50 euros. And then 50 euros is taken off your bank account, and you have 50 digital euros on your digital euro holding. So then you're all set to go. And then there are actually indeed two ways that you can make use of the digital euro. So either via an app, mm-hmm. and the app can be on your laptop or your desktop, on your mobile phone, even on your smartwatch. So you can and there you have or a card. And then for the digital wallet, there would be two options. So either your bank provides it in the current wallet that you already have, so there's just an additional option in your wallet, or the European Euro system will issue a digital euro app, which you can download, and that is specifically dedicated to the digital euro. And there you can manage all your digital euro accounts and do payments from there. So it's your choice. So either you use the one you get from your bank, if your bank provides it, or you use the standalone app. And then these two you can use in the shop. And so on card it will be a contactless payment, like you know now. It can also be with smartwatch. Also still looking into other options, so maybe with the QR code. This is a part of the technical exploration we still need to do in the coming years.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah, because that I know as well, like, this is not so it differs per country. Some countries already have this, right? Like, I know when I moved to Belgium, I learned like there's this Payconiq app. The shop gives me a QR code. I can do that with the digital euro app.
Yes.
And the other option is, I maybe still have my private bank card, but it doesn't say Visa here. It says digital euro.
Yes.
And then it happens automatically via digital euro from there on out.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And then, I like online shopping. I never need my card for that, or not per se. Then I could imagine now I go to my online store. Let's say it's Amazon. It now gives me always payment options. It says, okay, in Belgium, do you want to use Payconiq? Do you want to use Visa or MasterCard? I suspect these are typically lower because they're more expensive for the merchant. Do you want to use PayPal? It's another one, I think, right? And then it will say, do you want to use the digital euro? Is that how it, what it might look like for a consumer?
We might also be on top, but that's not a given. But indeed, the digital euro would be a payment option. So you would see digital euro, and then you could click and say, I want to pay with a digital euro, and that activates then in the payment, and then it could be two forms. So either again with a QR code or with a pay by link. But you will really see, and that's actually the same in the shop, you will always see, I pay with a digital euro. Yeah.
And then, but from my perspective, from the user, it doesn't matter too much, I would, maybe the convenience, but the cost would be the same, right? Like, also for me, whether I pay with Payconiq, Ideal, or Visa or MasterCard, to me the cost is the same, but behind the scenes for the merchant, the costs are very different, right? Like, I think MasterCard charges relatively more, for example.
We could, so... I mean, it's difficult to say how payments will develop over time and what will be charged. So we have nothing to say in what will be charged on private solutions. But for the digital euros, we have said it would be should be free for basic use, which is doing these payments like we just described, for free. So that's what we promise.
For the user, right?
For the payer, the one that wants to pay.
Yeah.
On the accepting side, on the merchant side, so if we pay to each other, the other one that gets paid doesn't need to pay either. So this is all free. But if you would go to a shop, a merchant would pay a fee like he currently does. And we believe that with the digital euro, this could be a very competitive fee because and secondly, because there is the alternative, which is a pan-European, widely accessible and widely usable alternative, we think it also helps to keep the costs that are charged in general down. I mean, payments is a network product. So if you are big, and there's not a lot of competition, there's always the risk that you start overcharging. But with having this pan-European solution as an alternative there, we believe it also maintains or ensures competitiveness and effectiveness and therefore low prices in the market overall.
If let's say the digital euro is introduced and almost nobody uses it, but it keeps the fees from the private providers down, it keeps the private providers on their toes, you're also happy.
Yes, what we find most important is that there is this choice. So that's also not why we have said it needs to have so much adoption or whatever in order to be a success. It's important that there is this choice and that the people can make this choice. Having said that, it is important for any payment solution in order to achieve the goals, is that it's used regularly by a certain amount of people. So if nobody uses it ever, it can also not work as a backup, because if you have not downloaded the app already and put some digital euros in times of crisis, you cannot use it. So we do find it important that we make it attractive and that people want to either use it and accept it. But the most important thing is that there is this choice.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But you say we find it important that people accept it. but people will have to accept it, right? It's by law a decree, just as it that I have to accept cash because that's legal tender.
Yeah, in the current, so this is not going to be determined by the ECB, mm-hmm. but in the draft legislation, which is published by the European Commission, they have indeed proposed that every merchant that currently accepts digital means of payments also need to accept digital euro. So that would mean that if you are a bakery, a small bakery somewhere, and you only accept cash, you are not under this obligation. But if you accept any digital means of payment, you also need to accept a digital euro.
Yeah.
But we need to see, of course, what ends up in the final proposal. But this is currently in the draft legislation.
Yeah, and if the proposal works, then I want to do that anyway, because the digital euro is hopefully a better product.
Yes.
From a merchant's perspective,
yes.
Right?
Yes, we have we do a lot of interaction with the stakeholders in the market, amongst which the consumer organization, but also the merchant organizations, and they are very supportive of the digital euro. So we do expect indeed that they would want to accept the digital euro.
Yeah. Because they think at least they'll have to pay fewer fees.
Well, I think that they very good understand that it's good that there are sufficient choices in the market, and that keeps all players in the market on their toes.
Yeah. Okay. So, okay, I think I get it in the sense that, you know, from my perspective, it's just another, like, it doesn't have to do anything with cash. It's just another digital alternative for me, for my Visa card, for my MasterCard, for my PayPal account, which I still sometimes use, even though I hate it because they charge ridiculously high fees. But and in my case, Payconiq, and for my Dutch friends, Ideal. It's just an alternative to that, and it might keep the private sector on their toes, or it might be a better product for some, and then it's just more choice.
Yeah. Yeah, can I add one thing that we have not touched upon? Because this is the digital euro, the online version. Mm-hmm. What I have not touched upon is that we are also designing an offline version. And that is slightly different. So there the digital euros would be stored on either your phone or on a card. And you can use it without electricity or without having any reach on the internet. So that also helps us to increase the resilience of the payment system. And it would mean that, let's assume that we both have this, and let's assume that we have it both on our phone. Then I can pay you 20 euros, digital mm-hmm. euros, and by just holding our phones close to each other, we can transport these 20 euros from my phone to your phone. And there's no network in between. So this is a very private way of paying as well. So very close to how cash would work.
Mm-hmm.
So especially with the offline digital euro, that will be very, very close. I think as close as we can be to cash, to digital cash.
Because, you know, I've been at a festival at some point trying to pay with Payconiq app. Internet was down.
Yeah.
I couldn't pay.
Yes.
That problem will not happen then.
No, will be resolved.
Of course, if I have a phone, I can, and the other person has a phone, I can transfer money to someone. For that, I do need mobile connection, of course. And that's also just quite a hassle.
Yeah.
And this is just tap phone easier way. Yeah.
Yes. So
okay,
it will be almost as if I give you this 10 euros.
Yeah.
By holding the phone. Mm. So we don't need internet. You don't need electricity. You just can pay. And this is between the two of us. But we will also look that also merchants can accept offline payments. So in this case, you can still buy your beer at this merchant, even though there's no internet access.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, okay. And then there's also this is maybe a small example, but sometimes, let's say a bar is very far underground. So that can give problems for your digital payments, and that should be solved then.
My example is I went hiking with my husband in the mountains in Austria, and I'm in digital payments for ages. So I only bring digital means of payments, but my husband loves cash. So he brought quite a lot of cash, and I was sort of laughing, but I know him, so okay, fine, it's good if he wants to bring cash. But I was extremely happy because nowhere in the mountains could we pay with any digital means because there was no internet reach. So we were very happy with cash there, and there the offline digital euro would function similarly.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that's good. I didn't think about it like that before, so okay, that's a good alternative perspective. So okay, I'm happy you brought up... you know, the giving me back the 10 euros, because maybe you could actually give me back my 10 euros. So then we can talk about settlement. Thank you so much. Because now that's the difference between cash and digital payments, right? Not only did I ask you for my money back, so we have this promise, the payment was settled, right? It was settled by us locally. Yes. But if we were to do the same thing with our bank cards, the bank, if we have the same bank, that bank settles the payment, I think. Then that means like making sure that indeed my account is increased and your account is decreased. If we don't have the same bank, you know, the payment provider does it, I think. That's how I understand it. But you know way more about this than me. Like Visa, MasterCard, PayPal, right? That's how that works.
It's a very complex actually. Indeed, for a digital payment, the settlement is done between the banks, and then at the end of the day, the banks also settle between themselves. So they make sure. So, for example, with the debit card, everybody does a lot of transactions during the day. Mm-hmm. And then the moment you do the transaction, they deduct the 10 euros from your account. I get the 10 euros on my account. But if in the same bank, the bank can just do it in their own systems. If it's between banks, then there are providers in between that make sure that this messaging is done vice versa. But the real settlement, let's assume that your bank receives much more money in total than it has to pay. Yeah. This real settlement is done at the end of the day in the systems of the central bank.
Yeah, okay, but So that's the reserve payment, but who does the give the information before the central bank settlement? Is that the Visa, MasterCard? Is that what they do?
Yeah. So actually, a card transaction is a bit complex because it was designed in a way where there was only settlement once a day between banks. Now we have instant payments where the settlement can be done instantly, but that didn't exist when the card system was defined. So what actually happens is the moment you do a card transaction, it's actually only information exchange. So between the two banks, they exchange information, they check. So suppose you do this transaction, then via your card and the terminal and then some systems in between, they go to your bank and they check, do you have 10 euros? Yes, you have 10 euros. And then they say, okay, deduct the 10 euros. And then because you want to pay me the 10 euros, will put 10 euros on top. So you will have 10 less, I will have 10 more. But this is only information exchanged. Only at the end of the day, the card companies make a calculation and then they say bank A needs to pay so much to bank B. Mm-hmm. And then the actual settlement is done. And all this in calculations is done still by the card schemes. And then this results in simple transfer of money from bank A to bank B. So in that sense, the card system is the most complex system that there could be actually. But going back to the digital euro, the digital euro would look very much the same as if we... So I give you now the 10 euros and then it's settled. Mm-hmm. The moment you accept this, then it's settled.
Yeah.
I've left my hands, it's your hands, it's moved. With the digital euro, the transaction is going through our systems and we do the instant settlement as well. So the moment that you pay to me with your card or with your phone, it is in our systems, and then you really have 10 euros less, and I have 10 euros more. So it's instantly settled. The money has moved. Cannot be revoked. like as if I would have given you a banknote.
So that is the moment we do that. Let's say we're in Amsterdam. We do that in Amsterdam. Signal is sent here to Frankfurt. Clearing happens, or the settlement happens here in one of the ECB data centers. And that's it. Is that how that would work?
How we technically are going to build it, and whether it's in Frankfurt and whether it's only one site, probably not multiple sites. But you can say it goes to the Euro system, and then indeed we will settle this instantly.
Yeah.
So
okay.
The moment the transaction is done, like with the banknote, the money is moved from me to you.
So how I see that now is like, okay, I recognize that's actually different from what the card companies do. But it is a similar service from the user perspective to what the card companies do.
Yeah, well, there are two differences. And some merchants appreciate that, with a card scheme, they are not paid out instantly. With a digital euro, they get access to the money instantly because it's instantly settled. Not all merchants appreciate that because it also has something to do with their administration in the back end. But for some merchants, it's important that, especially if, so this is one. I was losing the thread of the second point I wanted to make. Oh yeah, we talk about card companies. What we need to make sure is that you have the debit card, which is a Maestro, and there the digital euro would look very much like that. So it's really that. Then also card companies have credit cards, but that's a very different service because actually there you buy on credit.
Yeah.
And sometimes that is just a credit of one day or 1 month, but it's still a credit transaction. That is not something the digital euro will provide because of the instant settlement, as I just explained. A credit card functionality will not be provided by the digital euro.
Yeah, okay. So if I'm, taking a step back, looking at the industry, the payment industry will be affected by this. They have a new competitor, like if this happens, right? This is how I then see it. But a lot of worries before this were about the banking industry. In the sense that, okay, private banks create money as credit and they have it on their balance sheet. And they can get into trouble thanks to cash. If people don't trust the bank anymore, they will try to convert all of their money into cash. But because cash is less used anymore, at least for a while before the Silicon Valley bank run, I guess, people thought, hey, bank runs are maybe a bit less likely now. And I think, if I remember, talking about this a few years ago, one of the worries was, hey, we're going to have huge bank runs, or at least people, moving into digital euros rather than bank euros. And so then all the banks are going to fail again. But this is a big part of the program, right? You've thought about this a lot, and maybe you can tell us a little bit more how you're going to fix that problem.
So we have indeed looked to the financial stability, as we call it. So it's important that the digital euro will not disrupt all of the sudden the system as it's there. So. For that reason, it is proposed that there will be holding limits. So that means that because the digital euro is designed as a means of payment, as I said, not as a means of investment. So then we have said, okay, if we then could put holding limits, then the amount of money that could move from the balance of the banks to the digital euro is limited, and we can also monitor that because we know. How many people can hold digital euros. We know the holding limit, so we know the maximum amount of digital euros that are around, and we can then also calculate this and calibrate this in a way that it will not disrupt the system. So this is foreseen. The level of these holding limits we will only we determine later. Mm-hmm. So we have taken into consideration the concerns. Banks were also concerned about being disintermediated. But as I explained, you will go to a bank in order to get a digital euro. So we're not going to take the customer contact away.
Yeah.
So a lot of those concerns we have taken into consideration in our design, and we think it's perfectly possible to have a well-designed digital euro, well-functioning digital euro without disrupting the financial sector. And I want to add something to that, because sometimes in this discussion, it seems like the only thing that is changing in the financial landscape is the digital euro. So there is the current equilibrium, and then the digital euro comes and is changing things. But that's not how the world is, actually. The financial sector and the payment system specifically is very much into in change.
Mm-hmm.
So we have big techs coming in very aggressively and very ambitious into the space. We have new banks stepping up. So actually, we should not look at the digital euro against the current status quo, but against everything that's happening. And then these new competitors coming in into this landscape, some being very powerful, might be much more disruptive than a digital euro. And actually, we believe that with the digital euro being embraced by the financial sector, we could actually strengthen the financial sector against these challenges that are ahead. And last but not least, we're talking about, for example, bank runs, people moving their money. But we should be aware that people can still withdraw cash, but also, and that has been seen in recent incidents, you can just do a digital
transfer.
With amounts much higher than any of its holding limit, and then the money is gone from the bank as well. So we believe, long story short, we believe the digital euro is a new component in the system, and it needs to find its place, and it needs to find some place. But we don't believe it's hugely disruptive. And secondly, we should really look into this not with the current status quo in mind, but much more with the things and the challenges that are ahead of us.
Yeah, okay. So yeah, indeed, like even from a personal perspective, you know, I've noticed big shifts. I have a Revolut account, for example, which one of the new banks helped me out a ton, you know, paying money in other European countries that don't use the euro, for example. It's much cheaper. The app was great, and I think it also maybe motivated my bank to upgrade their app. And of course, I now have my Google Wallet, for example. And this is some of the stuff you're talking about, which is coming into the world of finance, disrupting it. And if I heard it correctly, maybe there's also a little bit of a geopolitical angle there, that a lot of these players that seem to be taking over are not European. And that, you know, again, brings us back to, hey, do we want to have a core building block of the economy? Nothing against foreign players, I think, if I interpret it correctly, but maybe we don't want them to dominate a crucial, that you don't want to be completely dependent on Russian gas. You don't want to be completely dependent on American finance.
Yes, that's true. And let me add to that is that it's not only where they're coming from, but also the power that they have. I mean, if we look to other cases, for example, in opening up the antenna of the mobile phone, in the case against Apple, that takes years, and we're still debating that with them. Well, not we, the Commission is debating that with them. So sometimes companies are so powerful that financial, punishments don't hurt them too much. So it's not only where they're coming from, but also the sheer size of some of the players that can give them a lot of power. And we can regulate everything, But sometimes that takes years of age and ages sometimes. So then it's better to have a public good next to that, that you can ensure that the people that don't feel well served by these solutions can also go for this public good. Yeah.
Okay, so for example, I have a small regional German bank. Might actually be quite threatening for me that Google's muscling in with an expensive service that everybody's now using. But hey, now actually the digital euro is always there as a backup, because that can always also be the payment mechanism. And maybe from an individual's perspective also, maybe so many people are moving to their Google Wallet, but I'm getting older. I have some gray hairs already. Now maybe I don't want to get on the Google train. But thanks to this initiative, there's always the backup of the digital euro. There's not just cash. That's sort of the idea, I guess.
That's the idea, because maybe it's not only because you have gray hair, sorry. but it could also be that in order to pay with any of these payment means, they say you get great service, but you need, it's in exchange for your data.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And you might not want to do this. Well, fine. Mm-hmm. It's good that some, but then there's always this option and a choice that you can make. But if you like this payment solution and you don't mind sharing your data, then it's also fine. We're not replacing something; we're adding a choice.
So I'm really glad that you brought up privacy, actually, right? Because you mention it as sort of a positive for the digital euro, but you know, out of all of the concerns, and there are quite a lot of concerns, which is I think a really good thing, and from what I've seen from your publications, is also something that has actually helped you to make the digital euro hopefully a better proposal. Privacy is one of the big ones, right? Because the idea is, big government is coming in, and they are now going to have all of my payment information. But you are saying, hey, actually, like a couple of times already, the digital euro is more private than, not cash, but than the private bank solutions and payments that we're using. Yeah. Now, how can you comment a little bit on this difference between public perception and your perception?
Yeah. Well, I think there are two angles. Mm. So one is the end-to-end privacy of a solution. So that starts from you as a user, and then it flows through the banks and through all the systems. And how private is this end-to-end? So how much data do I share? And the other option, and that is more what is addressed with the people that are concerned about with government, is, okay, somewhere in this chain, there's the euro system, the ECB, that will settle the data. So they will probably see all this data, and then they want to do all kind of things with that. But we have designed the digital euro because indeed it has been given back to us as one of the biggest concerns even before we started the investigation phase. So in the current design, we have designed the part that the euro system will do. So as we just described, the payments are started at the banks, and then it's only settled at the central bank. But that part of the processing that is done for the transaction within the ECB, we have designed it in a way that we can settle this transaction without knowing who has done these transactions. So the data will be pseudonymized.
Pseudonymized. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So we know there is a person that does a transaction to this other person, that those are two different persons, but we don't know who they are. The only ones that knows are the banks, but we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And we are experimenting actually with privacy enhancing techniques to make sure that we have as little data in the system as is needed, but we already know for sure that we don't need to know who's doing the payment, so that we can build it like this. So in that way, the design is already preventing us from being able to see it. So it's not that we say, okay, we see all the data, but we promise you that we don't look at it. Mm-hmm. We will not even have the data in our systems, so we cannot look into that or misuse that in any form. So I know a lot of people are concerned about that, but this is really at the core of our design. And it's not only us, but we have, for example, the European Data Protection Authority, and they also, we're in close contact with them, and they also publish reports on that. So they will also carefully look into this, that we won't have that data.
And then so the bank does have the data, but that's already the case.
Yes.
And so about this, actually, like someone, I asked my community on Money and Macro to comment and see what I should ask you.
Yeah.
And someone also said there, like, can you maybe ask if they were willing? Because, you know, this person knew that sort of this was in the proposal. Like, you're saying we are not going to save that data here at the ECB.
Yeah.
The private banks will save it. But that's already the case. And this person said, you know what would really help build trust? If they could make the code open source, the settlement code. Is this something you're willing to do?
Well, we are looking into that, how we could do that. We will for sure make sure that what the claims that we make, amongst others on privacy, will be audited by independent institution. Whether we can also move it to open source code, I can't answer yet, but mm-hmm. We are looking into that. But we will make sure that it's not only us saying it, but we will make sure that it's verified by independent authorities.
Yeah, okay. So that's that part. But also, you know, what surprised me about this discussion, because I do know a couple of people who are working at banks. And, you know, actually talking to them, I got the impression from them, also sort of under pressure from the central banks and the governments, what became way more prominent after all sorts of scandals and stuff like that is sort of, I think, whitewashing regulation. And so nowadays, banks employ a lot of people that monitor transactions to see if they are, illegal or something, right? But that's already the case. That's not something new with the digital euro, I think, right?
No.
It is, of course, true that cash doesn't have that. I also came across someone saying, like, the proposal is... maybe if we want to have that with a digital euro, we can build in a sort of limit where if a transaction is below that, you know, it's never going to be a whitewashing kind of transaction because it's a small transaction. Maybe can we build in something where there's a guarantee that this is like completely anonymous, also on the bank side with the digital euro? Is this something that is considered?
Well, on privacy, it's very good that you say it. There is this balance that we, as society, need to find between the right to privacy on one hand and the ambition that we have to fight terrorism and money laundering capacity.
Yeah.
The exact balance will be determined by the legislator. So there is a proposal in the draft legislation which need to be adopted by the European Parliament, but they will determine what would be the level of privacy. So what you described on the cap is something that technically can be built, but currently it's not in the proposal for the Commission. So,
mm-hmm. Okay.
But it could be, technically it could be done, but it's really a political decision how much this right to privacy versus fighting terrorism and anti-money laundering. Having said that, we discussed briefly also the offline
mm-hmm.
Solution.
In the mountains of Austria with my phone.
Yeah, and there you have a higher level of privacy than you currently have with your online solutions because it doesn't need to be registered. It's only registered in your secure element in your phone or your card. It doesn't go through any network. So it's really, in that sense, very private. And since you are you need to be close to each other, so it's very difficult to do large-scale fraud if you need to have all the secure elements and constantly being close to each other. So there, also in the current proposal, the level of highest level of privacy and closest to what you can have with cash will be with the offline digital euro.
And can I then also use that if I am not offline?
No. Yes, you can do it, but you need to make
Turn
sure
off.
That you. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. You need to make sure that you're offline then. So if
so
it's.
So if I want to be really private, in a transaction here or something, put my phone into airplane mode, and then I have a more private transaction.
Yeah. So we need to see how we are going to design it. But if you want to do an offline transaction with your mobile phone, because with a card you can always do it. Then you need to say, I really want to do an offline transaction. You need to make that clear if you're not offline. And that can be either by a button in the app or by switching off your phone. We need to still see how we can best design that. But you need to be offline. Otherwise, you need to make sure that you tell to your phone that you want to do an offline payment.
Okay. So another concern. Is programmable money. I think this comes from the crypto space a little bit, I guess, where they had at least smart contracts where something can be executed, a payment, if some condition is met. And I think also the Chinese, or at least there were rumors that the Chinese may have been working on some programmable money where it's more like a voucher, I guess, where the government can say, hey, you can have this kind of money, but you can only use it for environmentally friendly purchases. You can only buy electric vehicles with this or something like that. That is something that a lot of people are worried about, especially people who prefer more freedom, I guess, and less interference from the government. Are these worries justified?
No. So we're not going to build programmable money. It's exactly as you said, that would be like the central bank issuing vouchers. And that's not what we do. So a digital euro will be a digital euro, like a banknote is one digital euro. So it's it will remain its value, and we will not limit it in any way of its usage. So there will be no programmable money. And actually, in the legislation, it already states explicitly. I would say on top, because that the digital euro cannot be programmable money, but it has never been. It would not be logic for a central bank to issue. That would be like issuing vouchers. So we're not going to do that.
I mean, I guess it is logic in the sense that maybe in a Chinese situation, I do think they also, are rumors that they're like. Connecting it to the social credit system or something 1984-ish like. So maybe I just want to say, I think the concern is very valid. But I guess what you're trying to say is, yes, concern is valid, and that's why we're not going to do it, and that's why we put in legislation that we are not going to do it.
Yeah, and we have said that we're not going to do it. So it's good that people question this. But they don't need to be concerned, but we're not going to do it, and even the legislation is not allowing this.
Because
but we would not. Yeah. We also don't have the wish, just to be very clear.
Okay, because if I'm really not trusting you at all, you also cannot do it anymore, right? Like if the legislation is passed by the European Commission, then that is clear what the parts of the digital euro are, and there's nothing you can do. To fiddle with that. It's just, unless some new legislation is passed,
yes,
but then I guess people, need to protest then against the new legislation.
Of course. But I said, of course, the ECB will follow the legislation. We will not do something that is not allowed by law.
And that, I think, gets us to the final concern, which is the disappearance of cash. Now, you've talked about it at the start of the interview, I think. You don't want that. You're even designing, you're spending thousands of or maybe hopefully not too much money on the new design for a new euro.
Yeah.
Why would you do that if you want to get rid of cash?
We are very committed to cash. A colleague of mine said cash is our baby. I mean, it's our product. It's so we're very proud of cash, and we stay committed to cash. So it's not replacing cash, and people that want to use cash can use cash, and we are committed to provide cash as long as anybody would ask for it. But we want to put an option next to cash, but it's nothing more than an extra option.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, I think that closes off the questions I had about this. I learned a lot about sort of what that idea behind it is, like mostly as an alternative, mostly for me still like a payment alternative, not so much a bank alternative because of the holding limit. It could make payments for me as a user easier, slightly more private, and potentially cheaper for small merchants, which is, I hope, a good thing. But okay, there are concerns, I guess, by the financial industry. Some of them warranted. This is a disruption in payment. It's a new player. Okay, you say it's not the biggest player, which could be true, right? But it's still a new development.
We're only the only development that says for the banks that comes out and says, listen, we want you to do this together with us. You want to be the distributor. We want to give you a fair compensation. We want to do to make sure that this is also benefiting yourself. So we really want to do it together with the financial sector and therewith strengthen also the financial sector. So we believe that this is something that is for the benefit of society, but also could be for the benefit of the banks as well.
Okay. Well, I hope so. I'm definitely going to read more about it. I think also, is there something people can do to influence this, or, you know, if they're against it, block it, because or encourage it? Because I think, you know, the merchants are very enthusiastic, for example. So, but then they have to go to the European Commission, I think, right? Like, is there democratic accountability here?
Yes, of course.
Like
so I would say first that it would be important that they try to inform themselves as much as possible. So on our website, we have very short explainers. We have longer explainers if you want to deep dive on certain topics. So I think it's really good to inform yourself. We try to be as open and as clear to make sure that everybody understands what's currently on the table. And then we are also open, together with the Commission, in consultation. So we did one before the investigation phase. The Commission has done a consultation before the legislation was published. And currently it's in the legislative process. So it's now with the European Parliament. Okay. So in the end, the European Parliament needs to vote and or amend the legislation.
Okay, and then it will be a while, right? Like, if that all happens, 2 years, 3 years, when can we expect the digital euro?
Yeah, that will depend a bit on the timelines when the legislation will be there. What we are currently doing is, so we just moved to a new phase, which we call a preparation phase. So in parallel with the legislative debate, we want to further explore, to further prepare, but also to learn and experiment more so that we are as ready as possible, that at some certain point the legislation would be adopted and it would be decided to issue them, that we can go as quickly as we as possible to launch a digital euro, but that would not be within 1 week after the decision.
Okay. Evelien, thank you so much.
Thank you too.
I will make a movie about this as well next, about central bank digital currencies in general, because there's lots of going on. This was just a digital euro. There's lots more to explore about this. We haven't talked about wholesale digital currencies. We haven't talked about international payments, but maybe we'll have a chance to talk about that some other time.
You're always welcome. Thank you very much.
Thank you.